40 years ago this month, Erin Eve was murdered in a devastating car bomb attack. The British MP and Margaret Thatcher's Shadow Secretary of State for Northern Ireland was killed by the Irish National Liberation Army, the INLA. To talk about this, I'm joined in studio by Stephen Kelly, Senior Lecturer in Modern History at Liverpool Hope University. Stephen, you're very welcome back to the programme. You've been researching Erin Eve's life, a multifaceted figure indeed, somebody who long before, and let's just talk about the before, first of all, long before he became associated with Margaret Thatcher or Northern Ireland, had quite an amazing life, including an amazing Second World War.
Yes, Erin Eve was an extraordinary individual, and the more I research on Erin Eve, the more fascinated I am about his legacy, if you like. He was born in 1916. During the Second World War, he received military honours for his escapades during the events of Calais. He was actually arrested and imprisoned at Calais by the Nazis. Extraordinarily was able to escape and then was rearrested, and that's when he was sent to Coleridge, the prisoner of war camp, and he also escaped from Coleridge. He was the first prisoner of war officer to escape from that particular prison, which at the time was one of the most fortified prisons under the control of the Nazis. It was after he escaped from Coleridge, he returned back to Britain. He was recruited by MI6, and this is where his legacy, if you like, and his connections with spooks really takes prominence, if you like.
He worked for something called MI9, which I have to say I'd never MI5, yeah, MI6, yeah, MI9, never heard of them before.
They were, if you like, a training organisation to send in operatives back into occupied parts of Europe, and because of his own escapades, he was seen as the ideal person to train individuals to send them across, if you like, across the Channel and back into France and various other parts of occupied Nazi Germany.
And he became then an MP not that many years after the end of World War II, sometime in the 50s, wasn't it?
Yeah, so after the war he's retained by MI6, and then he goes on and takes a role with the Territorial Army, and he's commanding officer there. It's in 1953 he's elected as a Conservative MP for the constituency of Abington, and he retains that that position, if you like, until his assassination in 1979. So he's a man who's a mixture of kind of association with spooks, with intelligence services, but also now he's a politician, elected representatives, and it's that kind of duplicity, if you like, of his character and his experiences that makes him quite different to many of his contemporaries.
Now, obviously, during the 60s, for a considerable part of the 60s, Labour would have been in power. But before Labour came into power, was he just an ordinary MP? Would he have had, you know, junior ministerial positions? What was, as a politician, how well known would he have been in the 50s and early 60s?
Very, very well respected in the Conservative Party circles. Under the Ted Heath administration of the late 60s, he did have a junior position. But he fell out with Ted Heath, and he also suffered from poor health, so he had to take a back step in his political career. And for all accounts, his career was almost up at that stage. It's his connection with Margaret Thatcher that's quite extraordinary, because...
Yeah, I mean, she was a huge admirer of Erin. It was, and it was entirely mutual, wasn't it?
Yes, they certainly respected one another, but they were both barristers by profession, so they'd work together in the law courts. And then by the time Thatcher's stature starts to grow within the Conservative Party, and I'm talking now of the mid-70s, it's Erin Eve who was her election campaign manager. So when Thatcher is successfully elected as Conservative Party leader, Erin Eve is the mastermind. And Thatcher always, would never forgot that, and it was effectively anything that Neave actually wanted after that election victory, Thatcher would have granted.
Now, his interest in Northern Ireland, certainly my assumption would be that his interest in Northern Ireland was very military and that it was all about defeating the IRA and very little else. Is that an unfair characterisation?
It is, but that's the general consensus within historiography, that Neave was particularly ignorant of political events in Ireland and was solely focused on security. And again, in my own work in the forthcoming book on Margaret Thatcher and the Conservative Party, I actually dispel that argument and say that Neave actually had a great understanding of political events. I suppose it's an important point to also make is that when Neave is appointed Shadow Spokesman for Northern Ireland in 1975 on the opposition, on his own request, it's an extraordinary, again, request, because Northern Ireland was the graveyard for political ambitions, but Neave wanted it because of his own experiences of the war, if you like, and also his
experience. So he actually asked
for the opposition.
Right.
and Thatcher granted it. And it's from there that Niamh starts to develop a kind of political philosophy regarding Northern Ireland. I must say, first and foremost, security was always number one ambition, and he was hell-bent on eradicating Republican terrorists.
Okay, but beyond that, what were his policies? What was he trying to achieve, or what would he have tried to achieve in Northern Ireland, assuming he became Secretary of State for Northern Ireland when the Conservatives took over the government?
Well, besides security policies, the central issue for Niamh was regarding how Northern Ireland be governed. And under the Labour government, the Conservative Party in the mid-70s, they had a bipartisan policy of restoring devolution, which had fallen apart with Sundale Agreement and the Ulster Loyalist Strike. Niamh makes a significant shift in the late 70s. In 1978, he comes out in favour of Molyneux, who was the leader of the UUP party at the time, of what was known as regional devolution, where it's effectively known as compromise integration, where you would allow county councils in Northern Ireland to take control over issues around rates, setting up, you know, housing, sewage. So the idea was fully fledged devolution wouldn't happen, but neither would integration, because many hardliners within the Conservative Party were calling for integration, particularly Ian Appel, who at that time was an Ulster Unionist MP, and other individuals within the Conservative Party. So to say that Niamh was just solely security obsessed would be unfair, but he was noteworthy because he spoke about if he did come to office, and this is probably one of the reasons he was assassinated, he would reintroduce the death penalty. And Thatcher supported that, which again, not many people would be aware of. And he also encouraged bringing of more SAS troops into Northern Ireland, a whole brigade. And this is where the issues around shoot to kill policy come to the fore, because that's something that Niamh had seemingly been advocating before it actually became, if you like, a policy.
I mean, all of what you're saying reinforces the notion or the stereotype of the absolute, total hardliner and somebody that, Republican paramilitaries would see absolutely as a legitimate target, but almost an essential target. So tell us what happened then on the 30th of March, 1979.
Well, the events themselves, they're relatively well recorded in the archival documentation and the newspaper reports. So it's the 30th of March 1979. Niamh gets up a normal day, heads to work. The context I should make the point is that 2 days earlier, on the 28th of March, that is when the no confidence vote was carried through and the Callaghan government fell.
So there's going to be an election.
Exactly. And now it's inevitable that Niamh will be appointed minister, Secretary of State for Northern Ireland if the Conservatives win. And that wasn't the guaranteed point at the time. So the decision was made at that time with the INLA that Niamh was a legitimate target. And for several weeks before, they compiled a dossier of Niamh's kind of daily routes and his manoeuvring. So the day he goes to Westminster, as he would, routine, planning for the election that's to come. At about 2:58 p.m., he leaves Westminster to head home to his wife Diana. And it's while leaving the Houses of Parliament, where the cars were parked downstairs, he comes up the stairs, if you like.
Up a ramp,
yes. And the device is activated. Now, the device was
a two-switching
device, one watch and one was a mercury switch. So when you went up the ramp, it activated the mercury and triggered a bomb, which is like 1 kilo of TNT.
Right. Okay, the question I asked you before the break was how come it didn't explode when he was driving in to the House of Commons? And really, there can only be one conclusion.
Yes, so the Home Office and the British establishment to this day would deny this, but the clear reality is that the bomb was planted in the car park. And that was made very clear by the INLA seemingly straight after the event. Now, the Home Office at the time denied this and said the bomb had been planted outside Niamh's home. But again, as you referred to, how did the car then make its way into the car park?
Yeah, it should have blown up on its way in the morning. He wasn't killed instantly.
No, he died within a space of a half an hour, but he did initially survive, and he was brought to Westminster Hospital, but he died on the operating table. And immediately Thatcher was informed of his passing, and by all accounts she cried and she tried to compose herself, but she was deeply, deeply traumatised by Airy Neve's passing, and that left an indelible imprint on her thinking regarding Northern Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, the effect of the death of Airy Neave would have had a huge influence, or did it must have had a huge influence on Tory party policy and her attitudes to Northern Ireland, didn't it?
Like Neave, up to 1975 and indeed up to 1979, Thatcher gave very little thinking to Northern Ireland. She allowed Neave to take the lead. But after his assassination, and actually when she comes to power in May of 1979, Lord Mountbatten is murdered in August of that year, along with 18 soldiers at Warren Point. And these issues really drive home to Thatcher that we must defeat terrorism. And there's no compromise, there's no negotiations. And this is the framework that you have with the forthcoming hunger strikes, if you like. We will not condone these actions. These are criminals, they are murderers, and they must be treated that way.
But the political agenda that was espoused by Niamh, did that go by the board to some extent because of his murder?
Well, exactly. So the manifesto for the Conservative Party for 1979 advocated what I refer to as devolves, a regional council model. When the Conservative Party came into power in 1979, that's dropped, it's ditched. On the very day she takes office, her Cabinet Secretary, Sir Hunt, says to Thatcher, this is a no-runner. Devolution is the only way forward. You have to set up a power-sharing executive in Northern Ireland because the Unionists and the SDLP need to come and form some this form of alliance. And Thatcher says, OK. So she dumps Niamh's legacy, if you like, on Northern Ireland in terms of political legacy, but she continues his security legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the History Show this evening to talk about the killing of Airy Niamh in March 1979. And Stephen is the author of a forthcoming book from Bloomsbury Press. It's called Margaret Thatcher, The Conservative Party and the Northern Ireland Conflict, 1975, I beg your pardon, to 1990. That's all we've got time for on this evening's programme. And in fact, it's all we have time for on this season of the History Show. We will be returning later in the year, September, October, there or thereabouts. And in the meantime, details and podcasts of all our items are available on our website, rte.ie/history. My thanks tonight to Mark McGrath on sound and our researcher, Liz Gillis. The History Show is a Pegasus production for RTE. For now, for me, Miles Dungan, and producer Lorcan Clancy, goodbye and thanks for listening.
Follow us on Twitter at RTE History Show.